Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
A quieter week, I feel like, this week.
Yeah. It was definitely a little bit on the softer side, for sure.
Okay. Wow. other than you, your life was totally bananas this week.
My life was all of the bananas. It was all the fruits. It was a heck of a week, and I'm still kind of recovering from that. But yeah. News-wise.
Yes. Well, you launched your book. There's that,
I did
as
launch
promised,
my book.
Last week. The Incomparable episode about it is out, and your book came out, and people are reading and enjoying your book. And
Hopefully, so fingers crossed.
And you made a bunch of guest appearances on various blogs, which is nice to see. You're on Scalzi's blog. You're on Mary Robinette Kowal's blog.
That's true.
Yeah, a few
I was
others.
On Chuck Wendig's blog. Yeah. I crashed a lot of podcasts. The Incomparable episode that we did right after last week's Six Colors episode, did some Random Trek, some Rocket with Brianna and Simone over at Relay.
Amazing.
It's a lot of fun. You cannot escape me.
It's the book tour.
I'm inescapable. It's the best we got now. You can't leave your house. Yeah.
I have there are two cats in my office right now. It's very exciting. They're not going to talk. Maybe you'll hear a cat fight. You're very lucky.
Ooh, that's something we haven't had on the podcast before.
Well,
I feel
when I had one cat, it's very hard to have a
that's
cat
a lot
fight
harder.
With a single cat.
I got to say, I listen to, there are like raccoons and stuff that wander our neighborhood, and occasionally they get into fights with cats.
Sure. So that's not a cat fight, though, then. That's a cat versus raccoon fight is what
that's
that
true.
Is.
And I'm hoping you don't have a raccoon because...
No, we had a fox for a while going through our backyard at 2 in the morning.
Sure.
That was...
Hopefully not trying to sell you forged paintings. It's an Animal Crossing thing, apparently.
Okay. I don't know anything about that. No, I think...
Animal Crossing people are loving that.
I think it was eating rats what it was doing, which is like, go, fox, go. But I haven't seen the fox in a while. Fox hasn't tripped the backyard cameras in a while. It's too bad.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's why they're back there at this point. I put more cameras back there because I want more shots of the fox.
That's right. Yeah.
But other than that, I mean... What is their logic? Their big logic update.
The logic update is delightful. As we talked about it on the rebound this week, and I sent the Lex and John the release notes.
Yes.
For logic, which are about 20 pages long.
They always are. It's amazing how they do that when
they pack it in.
They do
My favorite part about it, as we discussed on that episode, was that there's the logic no longer unexpectedly quits item with its own 20 bullets underneath it, including, as Lex could not restrain his laughter from, logic no longer unexpectedly quits sometimes when sitting idle, I think.
Yes.
Which is, when it's not doing anything, but only sometimes. Which has got to be the worst bug to track down.
I got to think that what that really means is it no longer quits sometimes when it's sitting idle. Because it didn't always quit when it was sitting idle, but sometimes it did, and now it doesn't.
Right. No. But that's my point, is like finding that bug of like, it quits when it's not doing anything, but only sometimes when it's not doing anything. It's like, oh my God, I wouldn't even know where to start.
They had to follow that and figure out that, because it probably, it is quitting because of something, right? But it's something happening in the background that it only happens when it's idle. And I had a bug or a complaint that I made to somebody at Apple in the Pro Applications group that seems to have been fixed in this version.
Oh, that's cool.
Which is, my editing methodology is to use the it used to be called strip silence. It's called something else now. Remove silence, I think. Feature which you still can't tab through the windows in the dialogue, which is super annoying. And they added that feature. They broke that a little while ago, and they haven't fixed it. But what it results in is, anytime somebody makes a noise, that's a little individual block, and anytime it's silent for at least a second, that stuff gets removed. And so you end up with a logic project, one of these D&D games that we do, 3 hours of that with seven tracks of people. It's thousands of little tiny audio blocks. And then you select all forward and you drag them a little bit.
Sure.
And it was super, super laggy. Even on my iMac Pro, super slow and laggy. And on Ferrite... on my iPad, I do the same thing and it's fine. So I was like, this is a problem with logic. Logic is not built to do this. And I told this person who talked to me about my podcasting workflows in the pro applications group about this thing and sent a sample project that was a Shocktober, I want to say, Total Party Kill. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And there's one of the lines among the 90 million things that they updated in Logic is performance should be dramatically improved in projects with a very large number of items, basically. And it is. It's better. So thanks, German Apple audio software developers. I think they're German. They're originally German. They may still all be German.
How do they feel about chapters?
They love them. Dan.
Yeah, well then, yeah, there you go.
Over, do you have a Macworld column this week, or are you skipping this week?
I'm off this week.
You're off this week. All right, I was off last week. So, good week for it, for you.
Yeah.
Good week.
Yeah, you're exactly.
Busy. You're busy. I had one this week because I was off last week, and it's the, I did the ARM Mac lineup speculation.
Mm, yes, yes, I saw that.
I've been meaning to do for ages. And it's been on my to-do list for a very long time. And I finally decided to just walk through it. And, you know, what I ended up deciding was they're not going to change the Mac Mini. They're not going to change the Mac Pro. They'll probably change the iMac because the iMac could use a refresh. They probably won't change the iMac Pro, at least in the short term.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it would be weird if they refreshed the iMac and didn't refresh the iMac. I guess they're two separate things, but they're kind of the same. It's
but
weird. They're,
but I think not. I think if the iMac Pro has got Xeon processors in it and stuff, they can leave it there for another 2 years.
Right. Oh, yeah. Processor wise, for sure. For sure. Sorry. I was thinking for a second of like design. Like, well, I feel like if they change one, they'll change both. But processor wise,
I don't know. It's a good opportunity on the iMac side to make it a little sleeker and
sure. It hasn't changed in a long time.
Take the spinning hard drives out and basically do it's been, was it 2012 that the thinner model
something
came
like
in?
That.
It's been a while and it hasn't done it and I think that's a place where they would logically do that along with changing the processor. But on the laptop side, what I ended up doing was drawing a 4x4 Steve Jobs style grid.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And this is my modest proposal for changing the laptop line to have it make more sense. And it's pro, consumer, big, little.
Yep.
And so it's two in each slot. So I think what I said is 12 and 13 inch MacBook, essentially, and 14 and 16 inch MacBook Pro.
Yep. Yeah.
Just four laptops.
Sounds reasonable. Sounds reasonable.
You can get these bigger, powerful laptops. And the MacBook Pros, maybe they don't go to ARM right away. Or maybe the 16 doesn't go to ARM right away, but maybe the 14 new one is ARM. We'll see. And then on the consumer side, I just think there needs to be some choice that the Air is great, but a second model, especially like
you need a smaller one.
I feel like a smaller one, they can bring back the fanless design of the MacBook because on an ARM processor, it's going to be
get away with that.
The smaller battery and the fanless, and it's still going to be fast and because it's going to be like an iPad. So I don't know if they're going to do any of this stuff, since it is just literally me making things up, I also went so far as to say, and in my, if I ran the zoo, I'd rename them. And I decided MacBook Air and MacBook Pro is too much. And this is a breaking... they'll never do this because they've decided that Mac needs to be in the name of every Mac.
Sure.
Because I suggested that they just call them MacBook and PowerBook. And just that's it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm with you. I think we talked about this a little bit last week because I agree with you. MacBook Pro is one of those... I think I was saying at the time, MacBook Pro is one... It's a bad name, but you've gotten used to it, right? Like, you stop thinking about it because it's been 15 years.
It's a mouthful.
It's clunky.
You throw in the size because you have to differentiate on size.
16-inch.
16-inch MacBook Pro. And if you're insisting on Mac being in the title of everything, you have to determine that it's a laptop, and then you have to differentiate because it's a pro-level laptop. There you are. You've got three syllables. You have to have it in there. And MacBook Pro is the simplest name you can have for that product.
Yeah.
I just feel like
Mac Pro Portable.
I just feel like,
and then the, yeah,
just that you could go. Is anybody going to wonder what a PowerBook is? Are they going to wonder what that is? And then also that frees up iBook to again be the iPad OS laptop, and they put
yeah,
that out
and you could it. Call. I mean, heck, you could call the lightweight one the AirBook too, if you wanted to. If you wanted to,
yeah, but
you could.
But it would then be you wouldn't. You'd lose the Mac there too. So
yeah, but then you lose the Mac everywhere at that point.
I mean, it's far more likely that they'll just call them MacBook Air and MacBook Pro.
Yeah, but, sure. No, I mean, mm-hmm. I think Apple has resigned itself, and like you said, they want Mac in the title, and you need to indicate it's portable, and you need to differentiate the Pro model versus the non-Pro model. So that's three things.
Yeah.
If you're gonna stuff three things in there, it's pretty hard to do away with it. So yeah, I don't know, but it does certainly open up opportunities there. I think it's interesting that I think you mentioned your column. And how I'll put a slight asterisk on this, because you mentioned the iMac was the first machine to transition to Intel. But I looked this up because I was like, I said in a column 2 weeks ago that it was the MacBook Pro. And in fact, it was both. They transitioned at the same time.
Oh,
there was the iMac and the MacBook Pro were the first two models. And it was both announced at that, I think that World Expo.
Did one of them ship earlier? I remember the first Intel Mac we got in the office at Macworld was an iMac. They shipped us an Intel iMac, and that's what we did all our tests on.
Yeah, I couldn't. Well, that was the thing. It's like I read yours. I'm like, wait a second, did I misremember it? And then I looked it up, and it apparently
everybody
the
knows
first
it was
two
really
computers,
the developer transition kit that was
right, exactly,
was not a
January 2006. They announced the 15-inch MacBook Pro and the iMac Core Duo line, and then it's possible that the iMac
I think the
shipped
iMac shipped
first.
Sooner. Yeah, I think that may be the case,
but it was pretty close.
Yeah,
they're certainly. I mean, because I think they wanted to clearly demonstrate we've got your portable system and your desktop system covered, right? Like they wanted to make it clear that this was something that was, you know, have options on both the portable and the desktop line as soon to transition as possible. But then they did everything else kind of staggered. So because the MacBook was the last one, weirdly, because I remember when that came out, I was already working for Macworld and. I went to the store and they had one on display that was like brand new, like the day or the day after it was announced. And I found out I recently was like, you know, getting rid of all my duplicate files and found an old podcast recording from the Macworld podcast that I was on because I had actually gone and handled a MacBook in the store.
Ah.
That was summer 2006. And I remember because I bought one and then I had the ones where the cases, the top case would chip on the wrists and I had to get it fixed. And they gave me a black MacBook as a loaner, which were the ones that were more expensive because they were black.
Yes.
Yeah. So that was that. But I remember it was a long time before the MacBook came out. Or, I mean, a long time, quote unquote. It was several months, but it was the last, I think, of the major ones, aside from, say, you know, the Xserve.
I guess
the Mac Pro might have been later, too.
In our chat, I just pasted in two things, which are labeled Macworld Podcasts. They're not podcasts. But they, I wrote, first off, I was amused. I wrote the FAQ story about the Intel transition. So that's like a, you know, what you need to know thing. And then there it is. First lab test iMac with Intel Core Duo processor from January 2006. So that's the first lab test that we did back in that era, which was it's faster, but then all the apps that are running in compatibility
transition,
mode using Rosetta
yeah, right.
run at half speed, basically.
Yeah, I know we were talking a lot about like what that situation looks like. For apps in this transition.
That came up in the member Slack.
Yeah.
I think it's something, it's worth, it actually would be a great column for one of us. It's worth thinking about it on a few levels. I did write a piece about how Apple doesn't need compatibility anymore, which I actually do believe it doesn't need it. It doesn't mean that people take that and will often interpret it as meaning that there aren't people who rely on it, which is not the same thing, right? Like Apple doesn't need to make a computer that can boot Windows. Does that mean that there aren't people who boot into Windows on a, I have boot camp on my, I'm like, yes, those people exist. Does Apple need to make their computers boot Windows? They do not, especially since and I got it in the Slack, or maybe it was on Twitter the other day, that was like, but there's like, it was on Twitter, it was like, but there's dentist software and other stuff like that. It's like, yeah, you know, But I'll wager that a lot of that specialty software is getting turned into web apps now. Like a lot of it. And I know that it's not all, and you're going to be in some specific field that has an app that everybody has to use and it only runs on Windows. I get it. But like, it's less of a deal than it was before.
Right. I mean, you can, in that case, you can always, first of all, again, no one's taking away
your
Intel Macs
that you have right now. Exactly.
So that's why, I mean, it's going to be the same situation as when you used to go in your doctor's office and they would have one like old, like super clunky PC running stuff.
You could also get a Surface Mini for a few hundred dollars and put it on the desk and run your dental software on that.
I mean, right. Exactly. There's options here. And I think for Apple, it was always a nice selling point and a nice bit of sort of convenience, but it wasn't something. I think that most of the people who made that jump thinking, oh, well, maybe I'll buy a Mac and then I can always, boot back in. I think most of those people have probably just at this point become Mac users, or they went back to Windows, right? Like one or the other. The people who are straddling that line.
It's not enough for Apple to worry about it, which doesn't mean that ARM Macs couldn't boot ARM for Windows.
Sure.
I wouldn't be surprised if that happens at some point, if it's possible. Maybe the hardware will be so different that it won't be, but it wouldn't surprise me given things like the current stuff, like the code signing, all of that stuff is actually shared. Like when you're in the system integrity protection and all of that, it'll actually, boot camp actually looks at the signature of Windows and it's part of, like, they interoperate in terms of like security and stuff like that. I'm not sure whether a theoretical Apple-built processor is capable of running Windows, right? Because it's not the same as saying we're running the same Intel processor that runs on Windows.
Sure, but right.
It's possible, or possible that if it couldn't boot, you could run it at close to full speed using an emulation or translation layers. It's possible, but like, it's not going to stop them from doing it.
No, their job is not to sell you a Windows machine, right? Like,
it really
that's
isn't.
Not what Apple's doing. So
really,
if they
plan.
Yeah, if they decide that's a casualty, they're not going to blink.
So there's that. There's the other big issue is bringing software over, and you know, for the vast majority of software, it's being built in Xcode. Xcode is already built to compile to different processors. My guess is that most apps will just recompile for ARM, because actually if you think about iOS development, if you run things in the simulator, it's an Intel build, and if you then build it for the App Store, it's an ARM build. So this would be the reverse of that, but I feel like Apple has been building its developer tools to compile to either processor architecture for a long time now. Doesn't mean there aren't going to be outliers, but and there's the old issue of old software and what they do with that that comes in too.
That's the big problem.
That there will be, first off, they swept away all the 32-bit stuff.
Yep.
That was like part of this strategy, I think. And the stuff that remains, if it doesn't get recompiled for ARM, I imagine they will build a code translation layer like they licensed the layer for Rosetta, but I would imagine that they'll have a code translation layer and it'll be in there for like 2 years and then it'll be gone. Because that's their MO.
Either you've got software where it's like, oh, it's just going to take us a little longer to update it to work with it, or it's software that has been abandoned, at which point it's like, well, it was never going to get updated, like the 32-bit to 64-bit thing. Like, you're out of luck. Find a new piece of software.
There's going to be a lot less of it because that stuff already got cleared out. There's going to be very little stuff that's 64-bit Mac, but abandoned, right? There's going to be some, but very little. And if that stuff runs at half speed, like the Intel stuff that ran the PowerPC code, like if you can still run it for a couple of years, then great. And then by that point, you'll either need to keep an old Mac around, or it will have been updated, or a replacement will have been found, and you move on, just like with the 32-bit to 64-bit transition. So I don't think it's going to be a big deal, but we don't know the details about it. And it's bringing back all these old feelings, Dan, because I've been through two processor transitions on the Mac.
Mm-hmm. Same.
And this is bringing back all of those feelings. Because a lot of it is just people are worried about, like, how does this affect me? And that's perfectly natural. And I think the answer is Apple has proven time and again that it's really good at this. And it's probably not going to deeply affect you.
Right.
And you're probably going to be okay.
it's done chip transitions, it's done, you know, OS transitions, it's done all this stuff. And at this point, you know, it's well seasoned in trying to figure out how to make the most seamless experience possible for developers and users alike. And I think that's, they arguably have more experience than any other company of its kind, right? Like, I don't even know who you compare. I mean, Microsoft is basically the only other company in this market. And Microsoft has struggled a lot with some of those things, right? Because they've done their Windows on ARM thing, and it hasn't entirely gone well. No, they don't make their own hardware, though, either. So,
they're making a new run at it. But,
right.
But yeah, this is, and keep in mind, this is also Apple. Like, we're going to see Macs. The Macs today are Apple building around Intel chipsets.
Yeah.
And there are occasional exceptions, but even then, it's like the MacBook Air, they did a new class of chip for that. Intel did, based on Apple. But as soon as it was built, Intel sold it to other companies, right? Like, it was it was not it, and it was still using the chipset around that processor, right? It's Intel. There's a fundamental part of these computers that is just the stuff that Intel provides, and that's all gone in an ARM Mac. And it's much more like an iPhone or an iPad, where there are still elements that Apple can integrate from others, but like, it's doing the integration, and its processor is not just a processor; it's also a GPU. It's also like it's doing a lot of stuff in that one place. So this is it's going to be a very different architecturally kind of computer than we've ever seen before from Apple, because it's going to be an Apple designed processor. It's not an Intel or PowerPC or Motorola computer. It's an Apple processor in an Apple computer. That's
it. Really is
really interesting.
Because we've talked for years about how Apple likes to design the whole widget, but it's always been restricted by that, on the Mac side.
It's
the biggest thing,
like,
right?
And when it's not your processor, it also means you're using somebody else's standard for what a computer is, which means, you know, because there were lots of computers that ran Motorola 68,000 processors. There are lots of computers. Well, there were a relatively decent number of computers. There were some computers. There were a few computers who ran PowerPC processors who weren't Macs, right?
There were a lot of game consoles, right?
Yeah. And then Intel, obviously, there's so many different computers that run Intel processors, but there'll only be one computer that runs, one traditional computer that runs that Apple ARM processor as a traditional computer, and it's going to be the Mac. And that means that they can do anything they want, right? They have built systems for years with this, because they built their own iPads and their own iPhones. So on that level, it's actually quite exciting. Not to say that they won't start out maybe feeling a little more traditional, but they can really not build... These new ARM Macs may not be built like any Mac ever. Right. But they'll be familiar, because they're probably going to be a lot like an iPad.
Well, it's taken the shackles off, sort of, right? Like, you know, they had to design around a restriction because that was just what they had. Right. And so, you know, restraints are good in some senses, but at the same time, you know, having your control over the whole device, as we've seen with the iPad and the iPhone, can yield up some really, really customized, you know, optimized designs.
Well, the old argument was that you never wanted to build it all yourself, because then it was going to be this weird non-standard thing. This is in that column that I referenced earlier. That's a Macworld piece I wrote a while ago. It was like getting the Mac to use standards was a win.
Yeah,
because they were non-standard, and it was an era where it was a real win to use a standard. But you look at it now, and you look at the benefits of the iPhone and the iPad that Apple has benefited by going their own, because they didn't just go on their own, but they're good at what they want on their own doing. Their chip process is second to none, and because they steer it in unison with the product direction, it is a perfect fit in a way that you can't if you're taking off the shelf parts. So they have the huge advantage there that they get to bring to bear on the Mac.
Something that they could easily do for a long time either, right? Like, you know, even the first few iPhones did not run custom Apple chips, because it took a long time to get to a point where Apple was big enough and, like, you know, that it could essentially do all its own design, chip design, right? Like, that was not a thing that Apple of the 1980s or 1990s or even early 2000s was really doing. And, you know, if you're totally right that if they had done that at that point or tried to do the whole thing at that point, it would have felt very non-standard. It probably would have had a lot of, you know, weird sort of one-off things that just made it a totally different type of product. But it got to such a point where Apple was so large that they could just be like, yeah, we'll design our own chips.
Yeah.
What's the big deal? Yeah,
so
I don't know.
The other question that I've seen a lot of people ask is about Thunderbolt, because Thunderbolt is an Intel standard, and they're saying, well, you can't make Macs with ARM because you won't have Thunderbolt. And everything I've read suggests that's actually not true, that Apple has a license.
Like
Apple has a license for Thunderbolt. The gating issue is that you have, if you're not picking up the Intel chipset, you have to build your own Thunderbolt
controller,
basically. But like, do we believe that Apple's not capable of doing that?
They literally have. I mean, yeah.
Also, let's point out that Thunderbolt and USB are merging in the near future.
Right.
USB 4 is Thunderbolt. They're the same with the same connector. We will no longer have this concept of like, well, there's USB-C ports and there's Thunderbolt ports. The next generation of USB is Thunderbolt. They are completely merged together. And so do you think Apple has not done work on that front already? Like, I don't think it's an issue. It is worth asking the question, but everything that I've read suggests that if Apple wants there to be Thunderbolt on these systems, it will be there. However, if they do consumer systems first and pro systems later, it does mean they don't have to do Thunderbolt if they don't want to. They could just do USB-C.
I have to believe a company that can design and fabricate its own chips is capable of designing a Thunderbolt controller.
They would have to put somebody on that.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. I if they want to do it, they can do it. Let's put it that way.
Or,
right?
Like, or license the Thunderbolt controller and build it so that it works. Like, I mean, that's the other way they could certainly do it.
But they are one of the big... Despite it being an Intel thing, Apple has also pushed it probably more than any other PC maker. Like, they have a lot invested in Thunderbolt.
Yes.
In a way that a lot of other companies don't. Like, for example, I told this story several weeks ago. Like, my wife was working from home. She's got a Lenovo, and it has a Thunderbolt port on it. It doesn't work because it's been locked down in the BIOS by her security people. But it's there, and it's like,
well,
but
Intel Nook I have has a Thunderbolt 3 port on it. It's hilarious. It
works. Yeah, sure. I mean, yeah. Anyway,
as much as anything works on that computer.
And I think at the same time, you know, Apple, I think there's probably interest there in things like, you know, the iPad Pro has a USB-C port that's not Thunderbolt, but I'm sure they'd love to put a Thunderbolt port on it if they can somewhere down the road, or a USB 4 port more accurately. You know, I think that's probably something they have in their roadmap. So I imagine, and because we're also probably starting to think about, well, is the iPhone eventually going to go to that, to a non-Lightning connector that would probably be a, at this point, USB 4 or, you know, something like that. I think that Apple's probably thinking about that across the lineup of all their devices, because it is, if you're going to put it, I mean, like, again, to go back to like the original iMac too, right? Like, you know, the USB was around before the iMac, but without the iMac only having USB, it would not have gotten to the level of popularity, because you needed USB peripherals in order to use that computer. And so Apple, you know, as we have pointed out many times over the years, likes to push these things forward, whether it be getting rid of the floppy drive or getting rid of the optical drive or switching to USB. You know, they like to push these things that they think work well and are, you know, ultimately beneficial across a wide range of devices and a wide range of platforms. And if it looks like the next USB/Thunderbolt standard is like, you know, we would like to get the world to a place where we don't have to worry about, like, what peripheral are you using? What, like, do I have the right plugs for this, et cetera? I mean, same reason they've gone USB-C on all of their products now, right? Like, all the you know, Mac portables are all USB-C.
Right.
It's because they don't want to deal with, do I need a USB-A or a USB-C connector or whatever? Hasn't entirely succeeded yet, but that is definitely their attitude.
I don't know. They can do... More generally, the question is, never can Apple do it. It's always will Apple do it. And when people come in and say, well, but there's this complication, it always... Like, it's worth talking about it, but... Apple can...
They're going to solve around it, right? Like,
can do any of... Yeah. They're like, well, but what about this? It's like, do you think Apple couldn't do that if they didn't think that was a problem? But I get that a lot when I'm talking about things, and they're like, aha, but that's never going to happen because Thunderbolt. It's like, No, like all the technical capability and all the money. Like, it's if they think it's important, it is not going to be a problem for them.
Right.
It's just
exactly.
Right. I don't mean that Apple is like omnipotent or something, but like if Apple has a problem that they need to solve in order to get where they want to go, they're not going to not go there. I mean, this is the Thunderbolt thing is a great example. It's like, well, we really want to do ARM Max, but we never can because of Thunderbolt, because Intel is the originator of Thunderbolt. I was like, no. Like, no, either they will solve the Thunderbolt problem or they'll just put USB-C on the first ARM Max and walk away, because they're not going to let some impediment like that that they can control or beat into submission or redefine stand in their way of getting where they need to go.
Short of something that is like physically impossible, well, right? Sure, like nothing that they can't.
Time travel would be required.
Right. Yeah, you have to bypass the speed of light in order for this to happen.
We need to bring Steve Jobs back to life in order to do this thing. It's like,
and believe me, you think they're not working on that?
We got money. We could do that.
Yeah, if the problem is solvable, they can solve it, is I think the point, right? Like, you know, if it's something that can be done, they can do it because they have the money, the time, and the resources.
Like pointers on the iPad were an example of that, where people are like, oh, but there are so many issues with that. Catalyst was a thing when that was rumored, where people were like, oh, but there's so many issues with that. It's like, guys, if Apple wants to do it, I think they could figure out a way to do it, right? Yeah, like, if it's important to them.
Yeah. If they only did the things that were not hard, like,
right?
Yeah, we would not be here today, right? No. Like, that's the root issue. No, of course there are challenges. None of these things are things you just slap together and do it. They literally spent a decade designing these devices.
Yeah, it's a hobby horse of mine, I know, but it's just some of Apple's biggest fans who think that Apple can do anything at once, but when provided with a scenario about a possible future direction for Apple, they immediately list all the reasons why it just can't happen. I'm always amazed by that. It's like, well, what you think everything Apple does is great and that Apple is supremely powerful, and yet this one minor issue means it'll never happen.
It's the same issue as, like, I think, you know, not to delve this into another realm, but like, there are people who think both that, say, a particular group is bumbling and incompetent, and yet also like
three-dimensional chess at the same time.
Yes, exactly. Right. It's like, yeah, I'm not sure you can do both of those things at the same time.
It's funny. I was going to go in a slightly different direction and say that's probably also people who are incredibly, huge fans of a particular property, but also convinced that everybody who does the property is terrible and doesn't know what they're doing.
Yeah, exactly. It's like at some point, you're talking about different things.
People are going to people. But anyway, I think this will be far from the last time we talk about the ARM Mac thing, but I'm excited by it. Obviously, I got really excited earlier. Like, the idea that Apple could just reinvent what a computer looks like, how it works, because they'll control all the bits. And that gets me very excited, and then I think, yes, but we've already seen it, and it's the iPad Pro, right? Like, I mean, Apple literally makes a computer, I made air quotes there, a computer, the air quotes I leave to your imagination whether they're there or not, how about that? We won't fight about it. That it has USB on it, and it's got keyboards and mice and stuff like that, and it's as powerful as a PC laptop. They already make that, and it's the iPad, so it's not going to be as dramatic, except if you're a Mac user and you've never really used an iPad or thought about an iPad in that way. But like, technically, they've done the work, which is why I still think it's a distinct possibility that if they announce the ARM transition at WWDC this year, they will let developers install ARM macOS on the iPad Pro.
Right.
As a development system, which would be so disturbing. But I wouldn't put it past them to do that, because really the iPad Pro is very close to being a Mac. So
yeah, sure. Yeah. At this point, I mean, we'll see. I don't know. It's you know, we're 5 weeks or so out from WWDC, and I think it's still shaping up to be an interesting one. I mean, the real question is, like, is Apple going to play any of this conservatively, given just what's going on in the world? Like, to me, that's the biggest question. If they have this big transition planned, but they're worried that economically or manufacturing supply chain wise that they can't make this happen in the way they want? Will they hold back on it? I don't know. I mean, based on where things are now, it seems less likely because it seems like their supply chain is actually back to pretty good strength. I think the bigger question is whether they feel like economically this is a time where lots of people are going to be investing in these things, but also the flip side of that is people build apps for their jobs, right? Like that's also a driver of economic activity as well. So I can kind of see both sides of that, and especially if they've been planning it for a long time. It's not to say they can't push it back, but like, you know, at some point, as we talked about with the models that they released earlier this year of things like, why did they release the, you know, the revamped 13-inch instead of a newer 14-inch? Or why did they put out a 2020 iPad? Because they're ready, and if you hold them, they're just not as good when they roll out. So the speed of technology progression is also an issue when it comes to those sorts of things. I mean, like, if you're ready, you might as well at least announce it. Maybe the timeline is a little different for how you're going to roll these things out, but you know, you still have to prep people, right? Like they're not going to, you know, have one of those, you know, press release announcements. By the way, we're designing custom chips on all our Macs, and the first one's available today. I don't see that happening. I don't know. It seems like you might have a lot of apps that don't run day one or don't run very well.
Could be. Probably will. I mean, yeah. Probably will. If they do a developer release, it will presumably be really broken because the whole
right,
idea
that's a developer release.
Run your own apps on it. Don't regular people will rush out there and install it and be like, oh god, I'm freaking out. But that happens, right? Like if you installed the first release of Mac OS X, it was not good.
Oh yeah, I ran that for a while, and
it had
yeah,
that apple in the center that didn't do anything.
Yep, couldn't play DVDs. I think I had a DVD drive. Couldn't do a lot of things that were very kind of fundamental at that point. But it was cool to play around with. Like that was fun. Like I remember enjoying that part of the experience because it was just like, this is weird and different, and there's all these different things to explore and find
that,
out.
I think is the reason why processor transitions, that's the way that processor transitions are different from OS transitions, is that a successful processor transition you shouldn't notice, which means if you install the developer release of a new processor build on developer transition hardware, it should seem boring because like if they did their job right, it isn't any different, right?
Yep.
Whereas OS X, it was like, oh, the Mac is totally different and very slow.
It's not quite going from like a gas car to an electric car, right? Like, I mean, in the best case scenario, it's like, yes, I still get in. I drive the car and it takes me places, right? Like it's a little different, but it's still ultimately like the basic experience should be the same.
Yeah. Well, that was a lot about nothing.
I was gonna say there was actually that one other piece of news. I don't know. The Apple bought that company Next VR.
Oh right, I saw you wrote about that.
Yeah, which was, I don't know, it's interesting. I thought it was funny mainly because as I commented to you over on one of our other Slacks, we had just for the Incomparable read Sarah Pinsker's Song for a New Day,
yes,
which has a company in it which does these, like, you know, so it's a book that takes place after a pandemic and people are not congregating anymore. Yeah. Science fiction.
Uh-huh.
And future. There's a big company in it that puts on these like giant concerts in VR, essentially. And that's kind of, it seems like, what Next VR was aiming to do. They had deals with like sports leagues and some other entertainment companies and stuff. Uh-huh. And Apple bought them. Now, you know, the announcement on Next VR site, I think, said that the company is being taken in a new direction, right? So what that means is unclear. Could Apple be using that to sort of bolster development of media for augmented or virtual reality? Quite possible. Maybe they just want to hire those people because those people have a lot of experience with VR and AR.
That's right.
But it's interesting, especially coupled with there has been a couple things from different analysts and rumor watchers this week about the mythical Apple glasses. Including some people arguing that they could show up as early as next year and other people arguing that you won't see them before 2022. So there's a lot happening in that space still. And I think it's interesting just because Apple has started to lay so much groundwork. Like, you know, we talked about the LiDAR stuff on the iPad Pro, which is rumored to come to the iPhones this fall as well. And as I think you guys said when you discussed the new iPad Pro, it's like, unless you're doing AR apps, You don't need LiDAR.
Yeah.
But that's if there's only one application for it, and Apple still felt it was necessary or beneficial to build that hardware into their devices, it indicates that that one application, designing AR apps, is something they care a great deal about.
Yeah, for sure.
Apple you don't
buys
do that.
Smaller companies from time to time.
From time to time.
Doesn't discuss
generally
the...
Doesn't disclose.
Yeah, but it's definitely... I suspect that a lot of these rumors are about them, that they thought they had something that they were going to bring to market, and they decided it wasn't good enough, and so they pushed it back. And I think that's why it's... They're getting all the groundwork laid there. It would... another thing that wouldn't surprise me is if there's developer hardware for this at some point,
mm-hmm.
where their first AR product is not a consumer product, but is a development kit, and they can even sell it as being like, you know, for building great apps now for the iPhone,
right.
but in the future
right.
for augmented reality devices. And yes, and even saying, yes, of course, we're going to do something for consumers, but this isn't it. This is for developers to have this be great. And then next year we'll announce. That wouldn't surprise me if that happens. If not this year, then next year, that they have developer hardware and say, we'll have our product too. It'll come out X, like the following year. Just to get people kind of excited about developing for this.
Well,
but,
and it behooves them to be very thoughtful and careful about how they roll this out too, because the devices that have been vaguely in this category to date have had very mixed responses, right? I mean, you look at things like Google Glass, and there are, I feel like, a lot of lessons to be learned from how Google handled Google Glass. Because not only did they have to think about like the, you know, the hardware and the software and the experience, but they also had to think about like the societal ramifications of it, right? There was a lot of talk about like cameras or videos they're recording all the time, right? And like, what are you looking at when you're doing this? And how do you signal to someone whether or not they're being recorded right now, et cetera, right? And all that is something Apple wants to avoid, or at least to have a plan in place with how is this different from what happened with Google Glass, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think that taking their time is really smart there, because a lot of the knee-jerk reaction for these things is going to be like, this is stupid and terrible. And that's always the case with a lot of products that come out, especially from Apple. But I think they want to be very careful just about how they're going to launch something and how it is going to be received, because it could be a big change. But you need to kind of... I think you need to kind of ease people into it, or really make a good sell of why this is not the end of the world.
Okay. I think we covered it, and we're way over our allotted time. We don't have a time allotment on this one. This is all.
Oh,
I want to say big thumbs up to John Gruber and Ben Thompson for having their subscription podcast be 15 minutes long, as the co-creators of Clockwise. We endorse this approach.
Time limits.
And I said that 42 minutes into our podcast. But, you know, we don't have the time limit here. If we wanted it, we would do it. But we haven't.
That's right.
I want it to be around 30 minutes, and sometimes it's longer. That's okay.
It's fine.
All right. Well, another week down. Another week in quarantine. What'll happen next week? You going to release any books next week, Dan?
Probably not.
Okay.
I think I'll take a little bit of a
breather. Take a week off.
Yeah.
At least.
Week off. Two
at
weeks.
Least. All right.
Oh, God.
Well, thanks everybody out there for subscribing, and we'll see you next week. Bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.